sign system. I find you in the shows and moving all great. And being a nerd, there's sign system everywhere you go.
Cord, I have no theme song today. I was trying to think of a pertinent Brazilian theme song, something football related. Cannot come up with it off the top of my mind. So usually we have a theme song and I say, welcome back to Design System Office Hours podcast. We've made it.
We did it. We're here.
We did it. We're here. We're on episode or past episode 40 now. I miscounted. We're very excited. In this, whatever episode we're at, I think we're at 42. Very excited. 42 or 43?
One of those.
I'm going to pause. I'm going to have to edit that out. Yeah. Very excited to have Cintia Romero here from the Pinterest Gestalt Design System team. Welcome.
Did we start already?
we just get into it and get started. How are you doing, Cintia?
I'm doing great. Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to chat with both of you today.
It's so great to have you on. I get to work with this person every single day, so I'm super stoked that we get to talk finally on the podcast. Only took around 40 episodes to get here, but we're doing it.
Yeah, it's like it took about 40 episodes to get to talk about accessibility. It took about 35-ish episodes to talk about building components in Figma. So that's another interesting one. We've taken some interesting, you know, twists and turns here. But before we had started recording, I was telling PJ that Cintia had helped me personally with some very nuanced accessibility questions that I had about just how to treat colors for data viz. And I thank you very much for taking the time out of your day, 30 minutes, to give me some very tactical feedback. And it's especially given with a lot of our organizations being a little more buttoned up with information, I appreciate not only you coming on here, but sharing your knowledge to me personally and helping me, even though I don't work on the Gestalt design system. I'd like to think of myself as a Gestalt adjacent.
Yeah, I'm so happy that it helped you. Yeah, this is how we should think about design systems, right? We are a community. We all look at each other's docs for reference. Even that we are working in a specific team or company, design systems for me, it's a community. And when we help each other, when we get together, it's when the magic happens. So I'm very happy that it helped you.
Yeah, sometimes I joke and I tell PJ or merely the blue Pinterest, right? PJ, that's what Meta is,
or red Meta. You know, hey, we're kind of doing the same things when you boil it down. So yeah, it's, I mean, nothing here is trade secrets. And I think, you know, if we help in our peers, we're ultimately helping ourselves, and so. The more we can freely exchange information, the more we're all going to benefit.
And then before we kick it off, I do want to note, and I'll link this out in the show notes, that Gestalt is open source and is available to view. What's the URL to view that, PJ?
Gestalt.pinterest.systems. And you spell Gestalt, G-E-S-T-A-L-T.
Excellent. Yeah. So, any of the specific either component information that may be discussed here, or any of the accessibility guidelines, you could go on after this and peruse the documentation, which is not only extremely comprehensive, beautiful, well laid out, and extremely easy to use. Hopefully, for everybody.
Yeah. Give us feedback. Go there and tell us what we need to do better.
Yeah, so sort of riffing off a little bit off of just some of the things that I had top of mind. There's a whole, I think, discussion about amongst design system folks on color accessibility, color blindness accessibility, and really just how to get started. I'm using quotations for y'all that don't see me doing this. But as a product designer that is using Gestalt, how can they learn more about basic accessibility principles that you all are following?
Yeah, good question. Before going to Gestalt, I would say go to the WCAG guidelines. They are like the most trustful resource that you can go to learn about accessibility standards. And we also have it linked to our docs. If you want to go and learn about accessibility through Gestalt, go to our website that PJ just mentioned the link. And you can go on foundations, and under foundations, we have an accessibility page. It has lots of resources and links and the design checklist, very simple to help you to go through what are the things that you need to consider as a designer or as an engineer when you're thinking about design accessible experience.
Yeah, I remember like a few weeks ago when I was talking to PJ about some of the stuff that we were talking about, and I mentioned, I was talking to Cynthia about color accessibility with just our suite of colors, not only our semantic colors, but our database colors and how they might be portrayed on our background primitives. And I remember you said, PJ, yeah, that's more or less you're like, that's basic shit, right? And I was like, yeah. That it actually is basic stuff. And what I appreciate about Gestalt documentation is it lays it out there in bullet points in terms of not only design considerations in terms of just basic visual considerations that we should always be looking for, checking color contrast. That's something that should be implied, I would say, and I'll pause because implied is a very strong assumption. I've learned that recently. But it's also something that should be pretty easy to do. And there's I could count them on my hands and my feet, how many different plugins and resources that you could use to check color contrast. So there's no excuse to not do that. And then there's always these, I would say, just riffing off the top of my head, the idea of just thinking about these color contrast ratios. So 3:1 as a baseline for things that are sub a certain size. So things that are 16 point and above. Did I mix that up? Yeah. So 16 point and above, and then 4.5:1 for smaller text. So those are numbers that I try to keep on top of my mind. And then as I'm reviewing work, designing and refactoring components, I'm constantly going back to, we have an internal design plugin to check contrast. So I'm just constantly doing this, but wanted to just get your idea of how do we get designers to build this sort of habit into their day-to-day design process.
Yeah, one thing that I just wanted to mention before answering your question, like even if you go to Gestalt today and you see the accessibility guidelines, you see, these are like the same forever. We do need to do some adjusts on this page and make it better because everything evolves, like product WCAG guidelines, they're like launching the 2.2. guidelines, so we're probably going to need to go and do updates. Is the contrast ratio, this is still the same? How are you dealing with the change? And it's still like, if you see Gestalt today, it's only basic guidelines that designers need to follow, but they're much more in depth that people can learn. If you type accessibility and design on Google, you're going to see Microsoft Inclusive Design, that it's awesome. Like, I really love that documentation. It taught me so much. And what we are doing, it's the minimal bar. I would say there are much, much more to do at Pinterest to improve accessibility guidelines. In terms of habits, I like to compare. I don't know if this is the best example, sorry if it doesn't make sense, but it's like when you go to the gym. Let's say you don't like to work out. I didn't. Today I love doing workouts. But how did I start planning and making this a habit in my life? By doing every day, even if I'm feeling tired, if I feel no motivation, I gotta go. I gotta start so I can see the results. I would say with accessibility, you start with small steps. You add that, like add the checklist when you're designing. When you're like reviewing to send it to an engineer or to show a design presentation during like a crit, try to include accessibility. like do small steps little by little. You are like making it a habit and you start like paying more attention. Go and try to learn new things. I think for us, one thing that helped to plant the seed of an accessibility mindset at Pinterest, it's not perfect yet, but it changed a lot. It's education. Okay, I want a designer to create a habit to check accessibility, to design accessible experience, but how I want them to do that if I don't educate them on doing that? If you provide tools, if you show them how to measure if your design is accessible or not, what are the things that you need to look at? If you provide minimal education and also openness to chat, because sometimes people, they read and they're like, oh, I don't get it. It's too complex. I don't understand. Why do I need to follow the standards? If you explain, if you have an open mind and an open heart to share your knowledge, to review things together, you create this positive habit, this journey. This is how I see that at Pinterest. Does it make sense?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I love that. And I love the... I learned quite a bit when I listened to your appearance on the other Design System podcast, and you talked about education and how you're able to make an impact across the entire design org. So maybe you and PJ could sort of split this question, but how did you all get funding and time to take a step back and do that sort of training and education?
Okay, so when I started working at Pinterest, and I was joining the office hours, I was reviewing design, and I saw, oh, this is like, you know, contrast. Oh, the tab, like the keyboard, navigation here, it's not looking right. How do we make things better? And we were asking designers like, hey, did you check for accessibility? And people, of course, oh, no, it's not on the scope. I don't know how to do that. And we realized, okay, I think that it's a gap. On Pinterest, we aim to do an inclusive product. We say in our mission, right? We have the mission to bring to everyone the inspiration to create the life that they love. Okay, but when you say everyone, who is everyone? Are you like really thinking on everyone? So I was chatting with the team and like, hey, what if we create like an accessibility training for designers? We can do... like similar when you go to ACAG and you see all the guidelines, it's very complex. You can make like a simple way to teach designers how to go through the checklist to understand accessibility, what they need to do. And I was fortunate because I had a coworker who is not at Pinterest anymore, Aisha, who was also passionate about accessibility. And I was jamming with her like, hey, I wanted to create this training. Can you help me to review? What do you think? And she was like, yes, you should totally go for it. And I'm like, yes, why not? Thing that was very important was to get support from PJ. I was bringing the idea for him like, hey, can I do that? And he's like, yes, why not? We should try. And we came out first with a pilot version. We didn't make it official yet. We just started like, hey, let's ask on the design channel. Hey, designers, who wants to learn about accessibility? And I was surprised by a lot of people who answered yes. And we did, okay, for this pilot test, we're going to select a few of you and you're going to do a class. And on this class, you're going to cover principles, accessibility principles, design checklist, screen reader, what is a screen reader, how to use. We're going to talk about assistive technology, why accessibility is innovation, it's not a barrier, and things like that, and do some interactive exercise. And we did this with a few, like I think it was 12 folks on this pilot, and people love it. The feedback was so good and they were like, oh, I learned a lot. And even like some folks who left Pinterest, they're like, hey, can you share like some results? I wanted to create the same training in my new company because it was so great. I learned a lot. I'm like, yes. And they decided, okay, like it was a success. Designers really appreciated learning more about accessibility. And we found an opportunity to make it recurring. So we did that every quarter. We trained like it was about 25 to 30 folks, And it was so good that we had more requests from like research. Can you do the same training for the entire research team? Yes, we can customize that and focus on research. Oh, can you train the brand team on accessibility? Can you talk how Gestalt does that? Yes, let's chat with brand. Oh, LNG, learning and development. Can you teach us about accessibility? Yes. And the things start like growing. And we trained like hundreds of folks, which is great. And right now, it's actually on hold. Why? Because we're not like hiring as much as we were before. And we trained almost all the designers on accessibility. But we still need to go back and do more training. We are like still deciding, are we going to do this in a different format instead of being interactive? Maybe we do that in e-learning format. We still don't know. But yes, I hope it helps to answer your question.
Well, I think the having the buy-in, I think from leadership, I think is key. And then also making it beyond the pilot and continuing to extend it. I think kudos to you and the team to it. I think one of the major things, I think also now, like, I love that you mentioned the e-learning. And I think larger companies like ourselves, we either have our own e-learning platform. We have one internal. I don't know who the vendor is, but we had just recently created a new version of Distar. We have like a design camp that's like a new hire orientation. We also aren't hiring as much anymore so opportunities for new folks to come in and take the training isn't high, but there surely are lots of designers that are moving in and out of the org. There's lots of designers that are coming in and transferring in. So I think that there's many opportunities to hit up other designers that are new to us. And that, I think that's the exciting thing, because it also brings some new and interesting perspectives.
Observation that I have from seeing Cinched do this work and lead this work and up level not only entire org, but like many different orgs within the company. I think design orgs put a strong emphasis on, you know, the traditional work. I'll say the traditional work of like, I designed this thing and it went in the product, which is great and important. But what else is important is the work of up-leveling everyone else. That can sometimes be harder to resonate when you talk about someone, their impact within the company. And that's been an interesting discussion that Cinched and I have had about really trying to showcase the impact that she's had in terms of up-leveling not only the entire design org, but brand and research. Well, research is within the design org. But you know what I'm saying. Other orgs outside of traditional product design, she's been seminal in having them understand accessibility and up-level their own capabilities. That is absolutely invaluable, especially at, you know, the scale of a Pinterest and especially at a Meta. You know, one can only do so much in the day from an IC perspective, but if you can make sure that everyone else is doing better work, that is incredible impact. And that's the thing that we've been talking a lot about, is how do we showcase that? How do we represent her, the impact that she's making to increase the craft in terms of accessibility that everyone's bringing to the table?
Listen to this podcast and you have ideas, let us know. We would love to learn from your company how you are doing that, PJ and I. But I wanted to add one thing to that, Dave, to your question. About the one of the reasons why this training was successful is not because I created this and I put the content together. It's how the team, the Gestalt team, got the idea. Like people, they took that as their own like personal project. Everybody's passionate about accessibility. It's not only me. We have Kate. She is on the mobile side and she has so many great insights. She drives the screen reader part of the training, showing folks how to use screen readers, and they get so surprised when they see that. We have Hector, who brings a bunch of perspectives on innovation and accessibility. Even our apprentices also helping us to drive accessibility considerations and teaching folks how to make things accessible. I think if you get a group of folks who are passionate about accessibility, who want to make the product better for a broader range of people, you're going to have much more chance to create, to design this training for all instead of just relying on one person. And again, PJ and I, we try to make this visible to the entire company as something valuable. But if you don't get leadership support, you're not going to make it further. Because accessibility is everyone's job. It's not only design. Of course, we as designers, accessibility should start in the design phase of the product. But it goes beyond every single area on the company. If you work with people, if we're caring about pinners or even about employees, we need to think and to consider accessibility. It goes beyond design, really.
Go back to that word, like implied. So I mentioned, I made an accusation about things being implied. So I think as a designer utilizing the business design system, I would assume that there's checks and balances and things have been validated from like a text point of view, a color point of view, data viz, all those sorts of things. So like I would like to make that assumption because I've heard many design leaders give those sorts of statements. So this does really gut check our own work, and not to throw myself under the bus, I just checked everything and I was like, oh shit. All right, I'm going to check everything. I'm going to check all our colors against the background colors that we use for light and dark mode. Okay, let's see where we're going to get. All right, I'm going to check all the DataViz colors against light and dark mode. Plus, I'm going to check them against each other. Then, Cintia taught me about the Sim Daltonism to check the different color blindness modes. And I got to a point where I didn't like what I saw. And I did test my assumptions. But I feel like these days with all the plugins and resources that were are available, it's really easy to provide good recommendations that are compliant. So like while I felt bummed that certain things did not meet 3-to-1 for color, I was able to find suitable solutions, and I'm off to provide some good recommendations. So like I do think that customers and designers that are utilizing the system do assume that everything is accessible and compliant out of the box. And we should make sure to keep that trust going that everything should be accessible unless it's marked otherwise.
There's a quote that I found, which I found out is actually a title of a book. And it's the way you do anything is the way you do everything. Meaning, if you're creating an internal deck and it ain't accessible, there's a good friggin' chance that your designs are also not accessible. So if you give a shit about this, it's not like just our customers have accessibility challenges. People within Pinterest do as well. People within Meta do as well. If you form the habit and you work that way, it's going to lead to you working on the design that way. So this is as much a habit forming process as it is a design process. And that's what we're trying to do, is just, you know, live the way we want to work in everything that we do, because then it makes the work really easy because we're already doing it every single day.
Yeah, I believe you teach people a lot and you inspire people by being the example. If we start doing things, why Gestalt cares about accessibility? Why? We're a design systems team. If we build like an accessible foundation, we're going to set the example. And we wanted to show also accessibility goals way beyond colors. We're thinking about colors, visual users, but what about the users who don't see colors at all? What about like interactions, navigation, keyboard, assistive technologies, let's say semantic, like structure of your code, not only of your design, but how you chat with engineers to make sure that not only the design, but also the code, it's accessible by many users. How do you communicate error messages? How do you prevent errors to happen if folks, they can't rely on vision? How do you think about language, readability, consistency? It's much, much more than just colors. It's a whole set of things that you need to think. if we as a team, we can provide resources, it doesn't mean that people will use the resource. This is another subject. How do we make sure that people, they use the resource and the documentation and the tools that we are offering? But if you have tools, design checklists, annotation kits, and things that can make their lives better when designing, you're increasing the chance that they will make this a habit. If you just talk, okay, we're talking, they're listening, but they can forget. But how can they refer to the things that you said? So it's important to have resources, to provide tools. PJ is working a lot on tooling. How can we make a plugin that helps in many ways, including accessibility? So these are like challenges that we're trying to do. We're not there yet, but things that we need to think ahead.
Yeah, I love the templates that y'all or all of us are looking to build. So like I had recently discovered that at Meta, one of our design tooling teams had created theirs accessibility templates that help you spec out better, but then also it is sort of like a transitional area where it helps you provide labels, like ARIA labels and such. And then I had stumbled across the design tooling. There's a design tooling, like a monthly message, and they incentivize and call out and thank the people that are utilizing the templates and say, Cintia had added 20 labels this month. And I think that's a really cool way, not only to help out, but if every few people add 10 to 20 labels, or every person does a few more checks utilizing the internal plugins, I think that really up-levels the entire team exponentially. And it's not about one person doing it all or one team doing it all. Like if everyone just did a little bit, right? I think it helps everybody.
Can I just pause for a second? Did you just say one of your design tooling teams? How many design tooling teams do you have?
I think there's a design version, and then there's like the engineering version. It's the same team.
Very different, very different structure. We have I guess a team if it's one person. But okay.
Basically, most things that you could buy, Meta will refuse to buy, and they'll make their own. So we have our own documentation site that has part of the team, so a few designers. And then we have our own Figma plugin that not only distributes the components, but does the accessibility checks and the accessibility templates as well. So there's sort of a much larger team of 10-ish that's split between these things.
I'm envious. Just going to say
so
that.
Fancy.
I'm jealous.
It's a great team. I love that team. Someday, maybe I'll help that team a little more. But I think I cherish for any of those design tooling team. If you're listening, I cherish you, Rebecca Taylor. Thank you, Harold.
I have a question for Essentia. I don't think we've ever even talked about this, so I'm curious to get your take on it. All right, so let's rewind back. You know, when you just started Pinterest, what would you have done? Would you have done anything differently? And if so, what would that be?
Related to what?
That's a good, yeah. Let me be a little bit more specific. Related to accessibility, like in our journey to try to up-level accessibility within Pinterest, would you have done anything different? And if so, what would that have been?
Yeah, I think for everything that we do, there are always things that we can improve and make it better. I would do like maybe first trying to get more leadership support, like even on the pilot, because today we are like getting more support and being recognized by all the teams, but it took a while like to bring that reputation. If we could invest more time to dedicate to that, it would be much, much better. But if I think back, we also were way smaller in terms of number of folks on the team. Today we have tons of designers on the team. When I started, we were like 5, I think. But I think accessibility, again, it's everyone's job. It's not only on design, and it shouldn't be on the design systems team. Of course, everybody should care about accessibility. But ideally, each company should have like an area that it's in charge of running the rules and providing support and knowing the laws and understand it better to guide designers. So I would have tried to get this team first and try to get more leadership support in the beginning. So I would have less work to do, I would say. But we learn as we go. So if I didn't do that, I would know that today. So I would say getting the support that you need up front before starting, it's something that makes a whole difference. Because again, if you don't have the leadership support, it's very hard to make moves.
Yeah, I think that's a good insight.
Yeah, big encouraging thing also is the word pilot. So for everyone else that's listening, that this all started as a pilot, trying it out and seeing how far you get. And I'm assuming that this was a multi-half initiative. Like, this stuff takes time. Sometimes it takes years to either, in the worst case scenario, unwind, or it may take years to formalize. So I think that that's very encouraging that something that started from a pilot grew to something that is supporting dozens and dozens of designers.
Yeah, one thing that is interesting, when I started this program, it was just, I think, in my second month at Pinterest. I was just new, just onboarding. I'm like, I want to do that. Let's go. And the reason why I did that, because in my past job, I was part of an accessibility ERG, employee resource group. I did a bunch of accessibility work. And I learned a lot about accessibility. And because I worked in a healthcare environment, we needed to be accessible. It's the law. So we got to be accessible. And I'm like, okay, I wanted to do the same on Pinterest. Because for me, as a personal level, I don't like to work in a product that is inaccessible. I don't like a product that excludes people digitally. I'm not saying that Pinterest is perfect. We are far away from perfect. We still got a lot to do. But we do have the desire to do better, to make the product inclusive. So if we have a desire, we have a flame. So it keeps me motivated to keep going. But I would say, like, I was so new to the company that I just started with the pilot, let's go. But maybe if I'm like, okay, let's get to know the company. Who are the folks? Who are the teams? How do I go beyond the design org? Today, I have partners outside of the design org that helps me a lot, but I didn't have that before. So I think I was too excited to start something. And I don't regret it because it was great and it helped so many folks. But maybe it's something to consider. Okay, who are my partners? How do I structure that I don't rely only on the design if accessibility goes beyond design? Things that I need to consider before that will bring much, much more results for you in the future.
I think, you know, the other thing too, I think that might be a misunderstanding is that accessibility isn't just a checkbox to tick. Like, we're done. We did accessibility. This is a program that is continual. It's like saying we finished design. You never finished design. You're constantly doing it. It's the same damn thing. So I think that's another thing to level set, that this ain't something that you just do and then you ride off into the sunset, declare victory. This is a constant effort, a constant program, constant education. As Cintia mentioned, like, we may have to reevaluate how we measure color contrast. Like, it's a constantly evolving topic, and it's just part of making software, part of making anything. And so I think that's also been an area that we've had to provide some guidance. You know, design systems aren't a checkbox. Accessibility isn't a checkbox. These are just parts of how the work is done.
It's a very good point. And I encourage companies, if you're thinking about, hey, let's create a volunteering work to help people with that subject, why not? Well, let's go to Lighthouse and see how blind people access technology. And you're going to discover a lot of things and try to access your product with different range of users, with different disabilities. How does the experience go for them? What are the gaps that you need to fix? Because a lot of the times I see people, they don't care about accessibility because they don't know, they don't have experience with that. So it's kind of hard for you to understand something that you don't have any clue, any domain, and you just see people using your product with like some kind of disability. I would say when you try to reach out to more users, talk to people, reach out to folks, do some volunteering job for nonprofit organizations that deal with users with disability, you will learn a lot. You start like thinking things in a different way. It helps a lot to build your mindset.
I do have one thing I want to say to Cynthia before we end this, but it's just more of an appreciation. We can edit all these things out.
Yeah, I wanted to say something too, if it's okay. One thing that I wanted to say here, if you are a design lead, a manager, product operations, however, if you have any kind of leadership role, I highly recommend you to think about accessibility there. Like most of the companies, they do have education budget that people can use to learn new things. And if you really care about making a product accessible and also inclusive, there are tons of resources, LinkedIn Learning, design systems and accessibility, how to audit your design systems for accessibility. The Q University, that is the AXCon conference, that is the largest accessibility digital conference in the world. And there are a bunch of free resource for you to learn. So motivate your team. If you are a lead, like, hey, we have this learning budget. Did you use it? Oh, that is this book about accessibility. I really recommend you to read this book, and maybe you can take some learnings and apply to our team. We can improve accessibility and inclusive design in our company, our product. So try to take advantage of the position that you are at. You can do something, even that you don't know about accessibility. If you start at least with motivating your team, it's a huge step towards making a more accessible product. And accessibility, you can take baby steps. You don't need to do like, hey, I wanted to revamp the product, create an awesome roadmap. Of course, we want to do that. But if you take baby steps, try to learn, try to motivate your team to learn, the long term result, it's going to be fantastic. So I would say go for it and take advantage of your leadership position to make the difference in your product.
Love it.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess, you know, just to cap this off, I did want to share a story. Earlier this week, I posted something in our team Slack channel. I had responded to a message about Figma accessibility, and I tried to answer the question, but then I also tried to advocate for, you know, why accessibility is important. It's not just for our users, it's for everyone. And this is not to pat myself on the back. This is to state that 5 years ago, I would have never have sent that message. It wouldn't have even have crossed my mind. And the reason why it did cross my mind is due in large part to Cynthia. It's the whole team now. We've built a team of accessibility advocates, but Cynthia was a huge part of that process. And I wanted to just publicly state my thanks for how much you've helped me better understand the space and the role that it has within design. I am I'm eternally grateful for how much you've helped me in my growth.
Yeah, I'm so happy to hear that. And I want to say thank you to for being so supportive, not only to me, but all the ideas that we have on the team. Like, hey, we wanted to run a pilot. PJ, why not? Let's do it. I'm here. What do you need from me? And this is what makes the difference. If you have people who trust on you, like who is there for you if you fail. Okay, we have the backup at Pinterest because we have this value, win or learn. Okay, we can do mistakes and learn from the mistakes and win anyways. So having a lead, a manager who back up us and who is there for us to support and to try things together, it's amazing. So I wanted to say thank you for all the support and for being like open to chat and to help us with explorations and ideas. We, like, not only me, the whole team appreciates you.
Well, it's been an absolute highlight of my working time. My time working as a designer, to be a part of this team and to be a small part of all the great work that you've done.
Well, thank you, Cintia, for joining us and taking the time to tell us about the accessibility programs and your impact at Pinterest. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me today. It was fun chatting with you too.